The sages discuss who wrote this book, and the kind of conclusion is that Moses wrote this book about Job. And it's a very, very interesting book, and I just want to take you through the whole book. Just get it out. You'll know this is like, if you know this book, it's one of the most, even in the Christian church, this is one of the most delved into books. The Song of Songs, Sherashim is one of them, and the story of Job. So most people don't know this. Always the question is, who wrote the prophets? Who wrote all those books? So it's a very difficult question to answer. But if this is from Moshe, if this is actually written by Moses, this is something we should take very seriously. One of the Talmud, on that page of Talmud, is anyone familiar with the story of the whale, Jonah and the whale? So one of the people there also, one of the Talmudic scholars also say that that could have also been a fictional character. So it's an interesting portion. Okay, so let's take Job. Job was a man who was living in Israel. Or some sages say he was actually living in ancient Egypt. Okay? Job was living the high life. He had a great life. And he had a beautiful wife, great kids, super wealthy. He had it all. This is the first chapter of the book of Job. Second chapter of the book of Job. The angels, right? Or actually, this is the only time it's written the prophets about something called Satan. This is where the Christians based it on. Okay, so people ask me all the time, do we believe in Satan? And the answer is, we do believe in Satan, but not what the Christians say. The Satan of the book of Job is kind of the accusing angel, accusing energy, the prosecutor, that type of, it's not a human being that's trying to destruct, or an angel of destruction. It's kind of in the afterlife when it comes to, you know, if you have this collection that happens of all the things that you've done in your life, the prosecutor is Satan. So, book two, chapter two, Satan comes along and asks God, what's going on? How is it fair that you've given this guy such a great life? Surely that's not fair, right? Guy has a good life. He doesn't deserve it. So God said, yes, he does deserve it. Look at him. Look what a good person he is. So Satan says, of course he's a good person. Why is he a good person? Because he has everything. What about if he didn't have everything? Chapter 3. God comes along and slowly but surely takes away everything from Job. First takes away his wife. Then takes away his kids. Then he gets ill. Right, then all his business goes, and still Job keeps strong. And this is crazy. He's lost everything and he keeps strong. Now, one of the interesting things is, a lot of times by funerals, right? A lot of times by funerals, people quote a lot of verses from Job, and you should know this. If you ever buy a funeral, you'd be like, I recognize that. One of the famous quotes that Job said is, Hashem gives and Hashem takes. Right? I don't know if you ever heard that one. God gives and God takes, right? That's what you hear. And this is from this story of Job. He said, God gives and God takes. I accept everything. This is part of the story, continuation of the story. His friends, Job has three friends. One was Yemenite, this is what it says in the story. One was Egyptian, and they heard about his sad story. So they all came to Job, and they were trying to talk to him. They were saying to him, what do you think you've done? You know, why has this happened to you? And Job turns around, and he says, I don't know. I don't know why this happened to you. And the story goes on. There's about five chapters where they were trying to figure out why God would do such a thing. Back and forth and back and forth, each chapter, Eldad and Bodad, they had this conversation to try and figure out why on earth God would do such a thing to Job. What happened? Who can work out what happened as a result of this story? What happened to Job when he heard his friends discussing it? Anyone have any idea what you think Job's reaction would be? Back and forth, they were trying to figure out why such a thing would happen. He was such a good person. Why would such a bad tragedy happen to him?
God gives it, God takes it.
So that was his answer. But what happened as a result of the conversation?
Why do they care so much for myself if I'm happy with the situation I'm in? Because why are they spending so much time worried for me if I, you know, how to handle the situation?
Right. So that's that was my initial thought too. And the strange thing is, if anyone studies Shakespeare, one of Shakespeare's famous phrases is, he had the patience of Job. Has anyone heard that, phrase? Patience. Gosh, who brought you up? Come on, Shakespeare, basics.
We're in America.
Yeah.
We don't have education.
He was, this is before America.
Mark Twain. You
heard of
it?
I've also heard of the Book of Job.
Okay, this is the patience of Job. Something different. Patience of Job. But the problem is, it's a mistake, because Shakespeare never went into the next chapter. What happened was, Job eventually lost his cool. He completely lost it. And he's cursed God. And he's like, this is crazy. Why on earth is this happening to me? I don't deserve it. I don't deserve anything that happened. Right? And this is two chapters of cursing of God in Job. Next thing that happens is the next chapter is God kind of takes pity on him. He says he dies. Job dies. God takes pity on him. Takes him up to the heavens. Shows him the world, and he sees all that's in the world. He sees the complexities. He sees everything, what's happened previously, thousands of years into the past and thousands of years into the future. And what happens? The book of Job ends off and says, Job was comforted. Job was comforted. That's the story of Job. That's the entire story of Job. Okay? Job was comforted. Now, the thing that really, really bothered me was like this. What was it that, by him standing up there looking down, what was it that comforted Job? Did he see why this happened to him? Did he see that only because of, you know, their discussion in heaven that this happened to him? What would be the idea? Why would God do such a thing? And why was he comforted? Why is comfort the right conclusion? Does anyone have an answer for that?
He believes in the fact that God, like, he believes in God, so he knows that God has his reasoning and he's got his back.
That's really interesting. I like that answer. Okay, good answer. Okay.
That's an advanced
answer. That's a very advanced answer, actually. Because that's very, like, blind faith type of answer, yeah.
I just assumed that, like, once he went to heaven, like, God showed him the whole picture.
Right.
And why things happened. And just like he saw, like he kind of took a step back and saw, you know, why.
Why? So he saw the picture. So that's a different answer, which is good. Very good answer. So I want to talk about those two answers. So the first answer, which usually people would say, come across as kind of like an ego trip by God. Of saying, hey, look what's happening. You suffered. Take you up here. Boom. You know, I can do what I like. That's one way of looking at it. The second way of looking at it is a little like no Pharisee. You go up there. You see all the little intricacies that are happening, right? All the little intricacies, everything, boom, 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 boom. And you've got no questions anymore. You're like, obviously, this is happening, this is happening, this is happening. Why? You don't, when you're down here, you see a small picture. You step up there, you see a different picture. So that's a very, very legitimate answer. And it's called, the compassion or the comfort that he had was, this was a temporary thing, I just saw this for now. In essence, there's a much bigger picture out there. So I actually once had, this is a very good answer, I actually once had a story which I always say over for me, which made me understand things. I was watching a movie. Has everyone heard of James Bond? Mm-hmm. So one English person you had of it. Okay. I have to learn about Thanksgiving, you can't learn about Shakespeare. Ladies and gentlemen. So, James Bond, everyone knows, how does a typical James Bond movie go? There's a villain, right? 007's job. Agent M comes along and says, take him out. Take Goldfinger, or whoever this rich, greedy man is. Take him out. Your job is to be a double agent. You have to seduce the pretty girl, or whatever it is, and try and get an in. Right, is that basically every Bond movie? There's a new one coming out, am I right? Was it out? Coming out?
It's coming out.
Come on, you guys.
Wrong audience.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's basically how every James Bond movie works. Now, what was happening was I had watched this movie. In the middle of the movie, my wife comes in the room and I pause it. Okay? Now, to my sorrow, the pause was the moment where there was this very pretty girl who was coming out the lake, right? And you see James Bond there and he's got his gun pointed at her. Okay? So what's my wife's question to me?
What are you watching?
What are you watching? Okay, that's probably the first question that was. But let's take away that question. Okay? The question which you always ask is, why is this bad man killing
this girl?
This girl, right? She looks harmless. She's swimming. What's he doing? What's the story about? Now, what do we all know? Because we've all know so much about James Bond. We know that what's happened is there's been an hour and a half of a movie, which is previously shown. And we've seen this plot, and she's this pretty girl that basically has gone around assassinating tons of people for Goldfinger, whoever it is, right? And now the opportunity is coming towards the end of the movie, and this is the opportunity where he has to get rid of her. So this is a little bit what Ofara is saying. We're coming into the picture, right? We're looking at things in our lives, and we're like, okay, I just see all the tragedies that are happening to me. Now that I step back, what do I see? I see the bigger picture. I see everything that's happening in all different ways. That's a good answer. I like that answer. But the third answer is Manoli's answer, which is the answer that I like to go with. And the answer is, and this actually fits into the words of Job. The answer is, he went up there and what did he feel? What did Job feel when God told him, you know, showed him, you know, everything that was going on in the world. What was the answer? What did he feel?
Comforted.
And what's the idea? The idea is that Job actually himself didn't know. That's what I want to say. Job himself didn't know. He didn't actually figure out why all these bad things have happened to him. He had no idea. But he went there, he went up and he saw, hey, I don't know what's going on, but I was comforted. That's what happened. He was comforted by the fact Manley's on this level. Bad things happen to you, but you can be comforted with the fact that this was meant to happen. I don't know why. I don't understand it. It doesn't feel good, but it was meant to happen. And that's what Job felt. The end of the story, which I forgot to point out to you, is that Job, he regained all his wealth. And he had a great time, married again, had more kids. It's a fictional story, so don't get too emotional about it. It's an idea, it's a concept, right? But the idea is that sometimes some bad things can happen to you, right? And you don't understand what that is. So let's come back into our situation. Sometimes in life, right, we do something, and we think that when we do it, we deserve credit for it. See you, Justina.
Bye.
So sometimes in life you feel like you've done something, you deserve credit for it. Sometimes in life you do something and you think, why has this happened? Okay? I've done this, this should happen. I've done this, this, and this should happen. And the answer is as follows. Does anyone have an answer why sometimes in life you do something good and it doesn't work out? Sometimes in life you do something bad and... Does anyone have a calculation? Let's go.
So maybe it's not instant, because if it was instant, what would be the point?
Right. Why? And is it because it's not instant? Or what happens if you always see it like 2 days later? You do something good 2 days later, you always see the good.
No, I mean, I don't think like if that was the case, it would also be kind of, you know, pointless.
Right.
It's like if you did something bad and you blew up right after.
Right.
It takes away free will.
If you blew
it takes away free will. It's a similar concept, yeah. Right? It takes away... So I'm going to take this in a little darker side. Right? We know, this is a very sensitive topic, we know that there were 6 million Jews killed in the Holocaust.
Yeah.
Right? People ask all the time, why did that happen? So the answer is, I don't know. I've got no clue why that happened. Who knows? Right? Were the Jews bad? Who knows? Who knows if the Jews were bad? Who knows if they deserved it? Who knows if they didn't? They probably didn't deserve it. But there is some times in life, right, where we know there is a concept called evil. Evil is perpetrated by people. Human beings do evil things. Never misunderstand this. People say, like, oh, how did God do that? Did God do it to the Jews? No. There were bad people that did it to the Jewish people. There were bad people in the world that did it to Jewish people. The question is, why on earth did God let that happen? Now, I'm never ever going to ever tell you that I have the answer to that. But there is a concept in Judaism which is known as free will. And by having free will, there needs to be the ability to suffer. Suffering, right, and the concept of evil is a necessary part of existence. And why is that? It is to complete free will. Because otherwise, if you only had good in your lives, if everything was good in your life, if you had Thanksgiving every single day, you were thankful. They would have no contrast. There's not just the contrast. You would never, ever be able to reach to a level of a high level of goodness. Because goodness only comes out of the fact that you've made the mistake. You can only learn things from other acts. It's like a parent with a child. Sometimes a parent has to say, like, this child's making this mistake. I'm not going to do anything. You have to be able to watch the child make this mistake. You have to watch the child make the mistake in order for something to happen. So, for example, let's say with the Holocaust. So we have the state of Israel. The state of Israel could only have come about between me and you as a result of on the back of the Holocaust. It would never, there would never, ever, ever be a remote likelihood that the world would accept to make a Jewish state. There was a moment of feeling bad. The world felt bad for a few moments, right? If you actually read, there's a very interesting book about it where we had the president at the time was Truman. Truman should never have been the president, right? It was like a fluke how Truman became president. There was a moment where there was a lapse in the world's anti-Jewish state, and they let there be a state. And we know what's happened as a result of the state of Israel. The result of the state of Israel has been the saving of many of the things, of many Jews, and given us the ability to return to our homeland. Now, I'm not saying that I understand why 6 million people were killed. Never. But let's put it this way. There is that ability to look at it and say, hey, maybe the only reason, this is kind of a light, which you can say, hey, you know, I don't know why that happened, but maybe the state came about only because of that. Maybe that's kind of a compensation, not fully compensated, you never compensate it, but there is that silver lining. There is a silver lining. You can say, hey, at least we have that. At least we had that moment. So there's a very interesting, yeah.
Well, I also think that it came with, like, what's it called? Responsibility.
Right.
I think in a way, like, with the Holocaust happening, now it was kind of God's way of saying, okay, if you could see what can happen to you and you guys now have Israel,
right,
it's your responsibility to keep it and to maintain it,
right,
and to grow it. And
right, but also there's a certain energy which is kind of where we're coming on to, the certain energy that on the back of something bad can a light be shone.
Right.
Yeah.
It seems to happen a lot, like when there's mass shootings or just like a natural disaster.
Yeah.
You see it, this terrible thing happens, and then the community or people will all of a sudden come together,
right,
and it's like they never bothered before. They
right.
Like proactive enough.
Right. Always this town, no one speaks to each other. Also on the back of a tragedy, something
wakes them up.
It wakes them up. And this is the point I'm coming on to, is the fact that bad things are there. Why? To make you be able to reach to a higher level. So when you have a bad thing in your life, that's where your adversity brings out your bigger strength. It's practically impossible to be given Everyone wants the open credit card, unlimited credit card. But imagine if I gave you an unlimited credit card. So it'd feel good for a while, right? It'd feel good. Everyone likes an unlimited credit card, right? Has everyone thought of what they would do with first swipe with an unlimited credit? Nachum, what's yours? First swipe. Dora de Cruzier's.
Probably purchase a house in Beverly Hills and
okay, nice.
And sleep in there for the night.
just one night?
Just pass out in the living room.
Wow.
No furniture?
I don't need it.
You've definitely thought about it. What's the address? Which house?
Are you on Alpine or Maple? Or
I think in the
floor. I've got a good real estate agent right here.
I'd want to be in the hills, so I'm in nature. And hopefully get a good amount of land around it.
So ooh, I like it. Anyone else? What's first? Brad, what's your first swipe? First swipe with your unlimited credit card?
Off cold water.
A ranch.
A ranch, where?
In Topanga.
Topanga? Nice. What about the fires? You're afraid of the fires? No afraid of the fires. Lauren, what's your first swipe? You'd buy Elal? Yeah. The whole company?
Cold water, so it's super quiet.
Whoa. Just buy a plane. Okay, nice. Ben, what's your
the bottom part can be rented out as a separate unit.
Dude, you're thinking small. Yeah, forget your loans.
Get rid of all your
debt. The loans can pick up. You're not wasting time with them. They can. Ben, thinking too small. Think big. Think ranch. Think halal. Come on. Anyway, but what's the point over here? The point is you have an unlimited credit card. If you the more you swipe, the less you enjoy it. The only way you can actually enjoy earning money is through adversity. Adversity brings the strength of mankind.
Carry.
Right? Exactly. Adversity brings strength. There's a fascinating book, I don't know if anyone's familiar with it, there's an author called Viktor Frankl. He was a Jewish man, not a religious person, but he was a very, very famous psychiatrist. And he wrote a book called Man's Meaning in the World. Very famous book. Anyone who studies theology will study this book. Probably number one book you ever study. And he wrote something called, he actually was in the concentration camp. And there was a concept he came up with, he called it the logo effect. Very, very famous concept. Anyone heard of the logo effect? The logo effect was like this. He said of a story where he was in the concentration camp and he saw different human beings. And you can imagine the adversity that they were suffering in the camps, what they were going through. Right? Pain, torture, tragedy. And he saw and he documents each person that he saw in these circumstances. And he takes this person, right? And he's a person called Vladimir. He takes Vladimir. Vladimir came from a family of wealth, right? A family of where everything in his life was smooth. And he's in this concentration camp. He's half dead, walking around. And he speaks of this Vladimir taking his leftover potato and seeing an elderly gentleman who was about to die and feeding it to that man. And he speaks of another man, right? Another Jewish man called Isaac. Isaac came from a poor family. And Isaac came from a poor family where he struggled his whole life. And Isaac sees a child who was starving. And Isaac refuses to give his potato to the child. And he figured, and he was trying to figure out, he was trying to process, how would that happen? People would automatically think that the rich person, what would the rich person do? Rich person would keep it to himself, he needs more. The poor person would give. And he comes up, this is the heart, I'm just ruining the book for you right now, right? He comes up with a theory. Can anyone think of the theory? What's the theory? Why did these opposites seem to happen?
The poor guy knows the worth of that potato. Like he really values it now that he has it. Kind of like the poor mentality, maybe.
Okay, maybe.
I was thinking about like the poor man. He's been through not eating, so right. He knows that like the kid can handle it because he handled it. But the rich person,
he knows how painful it is. It's like, oh my gosh, this guy's about to... It's painful.
That's yeah, but I feel like he's like, oh, well, I did it, so he can do it. But the rich guy, he's had it so well that I feel like...
He'll understand.
Him more.
Fair enough. I hear.
I think it has to do with perspective of
what you feel you have to give.
Right.
So the poor man has never felt like he's had the ability to give to others.
Right.
And the wealthy one has identified with.
Fair enough. So you see, it's basically that bit, similar to Nofra, the ability to identify with the thing. But you're saying his identity was that he recognized it. So why didn't he feel sad? The poor guy should feel sad for him.
I think it's the opposite of what you said. How you said that you would think that the rich guy would need it more and
right.
the poor guy would need it less.
Right.
I think it's the opposite. I think right. the poor guy would need it more and appreciate it more because when you're poor, you grow up, for example, with less food.
Right.
Kind of also, like when Omar said, but in a different way.
So, but why wouldn't he give it? He realized he's a kid, so there.
Because he didn't have it.
Right.
When, like, growing up poor, he didn't have food. And now, like it sucks he's in a concentration camp, but he has food now.
Right.
But the guy who always had food and, like, was in a rich place, you know, like, he's all like, you know what, I don't need it. But I see that kid who's never had it
right.
and is now in an area that will not have it.
Right.
Like, he needs it more than I
right.
do.
Okay. I hear that.
I got two things.
Yeah, go on.
The first one is, I think that the poor person kind of feels like it's a normal situation
right.
for him.
Right. He sees a kid crying, this is normal.
He's
right.
always searching for food,
right.
and so when he sees food, he eats it. He doesn't think twice, and the rich person who has the
right.
ability to give probably feels
right.
it's normal. Is not always giving to charity, so he's giving. So that's the first thing. And the second thing, which kind of goes against it all, is what if money, like being rich or being poor, isn't even a factor?
Right.
Maybe it's something else that's contributing to
like
whether
that.
They give or
not. Okay.
I mean, at that point, it isn't a factor.
Right, there's no factor, there's
yeah,
no money.
If it was.
Okay, it's interesting, yeah?
The rich person is conditioned his whole life to getting bailed out, so he just feels like subconsciously he's going to get bailed out again.
He should bail out someone else, right?
Yeah, so
he's bailing out the other guy.
Him,
right.
So he can get somebody else.
The poor guy doesn't have a concept of bailing out.
Yeah.
Fair enough, I hear that. These are good answers, yeah.
I think the poor person is always in, like, survival mode.
Right.
So he's just holding on
right.
to what's going to happen.
Right.
Because he's always had to be
right.
alone. Whereas the rich person, it's easy, like, easy come, easy go.
Right.
So he doesn't know exactly what it's like to be in survival mode.
Right.
So he's like, here, just take it. Like, I'm sure I can get more or whatever.
Right.
Or it's just like, it doesn't have as much meaning to him.
Right. I hear. I like that.
But
I like that.
It could go either way, like, maybe just in this situation, but I mean, there are many people who are poor and don't have enough food, but they'll still give from themselves. So, just like he was saying, that it's maybe not necessarily like he knows what it's like to be hungry, and if he sees somebody else in that situation, then he would, whatever he doesn't have left of himself,
so,
he could still give.
So. Right, but he should have, so why wouldn't he give then? He should give, he should have given. The poor guy should have given. He knows what that situation is.
Well,
you're
that's thinking. Why I think it's like
personality.
I don't know.
Oh, nice. I like what you're saying. It's a personality thing. Anyone else? Any other ideas? Okay, good. So really, all great ideas. So the book is to prove, basically, that every man has an inbuilt will to get to know himself, get to know his purpose in the world. That's what his book's about. Man's purpose in this world. That everyone uniquely is built. We call it the soul. Everyone has everyone wants to know what they're doing here. Everyone wants to know purpose. But his answer was actually like Dean's second answer. And it kind of you all touched on it a little bit. The answer is as follows. Adversity brings out your essence. It doesn't make a difference if you're rich. It doesn't make a difference if you're poor. Kind of like you said about personality. It doesn't really make a difference. Adversity, your struggles, are really who you are. So if you go through all these things, all these challenges in life, and whether you think you've succeeded or you've failed, you can only judge them from your weakest moment. Because from your weakest moment and that weak moment where you have the ability to choose, am I a giving person? Am I a taking person? Is there something more than myself? You can only know that from that moment. Right? So when we're thankful on Thanksgiving, when we're thankful on Thanksgiving, we're thankful every day. Don't let it be like the American, you know, oh, what am I thankful for? Really? You have to come in tune with a different part of yourself. Look at what you've struggled through that year and say, what did I struggle through? How did I react to that? That's what you should be thankful for. Everything else was just given to you. This was your lot in life. You were given this in life. Oh, I'm thankful. Very nice to be grateful. But gratefulness doesn't elevate you. Recognition of or pain and suffering elevates you. So it's a very famous story, very tragic story. When I was living in Israel, there was a, who was on LEJ 15? I don't know, 15? Dean. B. So you remember there was, you guys remember there was a guy on the bus called Shai.
Yeah.
Remember Shai? Guy. Little guy, dark guy. He was a, okay, so he lived in a little place called Tekoa.
Yeah.
Right? Remember telling that? It was
cute. To his
apartment. In the by the Shuk. Nechalot. Yeah, so he moved, right? He moved there. So he comes to a place called Tekoa. There was a story that happened in Tekoa when I was living in Israel. There was a family, American family, that moved to Tekoa. Tekoa was like real hipster, because he was that type of guy. Chill place, you know. Beautiful place to live. Unbelievably beautiful place to live. And there was a family called, I wrote the name somewhere, Mendel, I think, right? There's a little 15-year-old, they're 15-year-olds, two sons, 15-year-old son and 13-year-old sons, went exploring caves one day, and I hate to share the gruesome details, an Arab came along, took some rocks, smashed their heads open, brutally murdered these two little boys. Okay, really tragic. I heard some of the details of something beyond even recognition. These Mendels, the parents, I actually saw them. They were not, like, their grief is something you can't even explain. You can't even explain what grief is. Their grief was like, they couldn't even breathe. They couldn't breathe. They couldn't believe they were awake. You've never seen people like that. And you can imagine what utter suffering they went through. Good people, two little boys, the utter pain is something beyond any kind of imagination. Unbelievably, unbelievably painful. And I was there by the funeral. And something completely beyond. And they had a lot of help and they had a lot of, you know, you can imagine the community came together and everyone was helping them and raised money for them when they were there for them. And it took a couple of years for them to even start living. And they founded an organization known as the Mendel Organization. I did some research on this organization. This organization has fundraised about $25 million in the last few years for victims of terror attacks in there. And I saw this unbelievable video. Yeah, I'll show it. I have to find it. I'll show it to you. This woman, who I recognized at the funeral, standing up, what was she saying? She was saying, I would never in my life understand why that happened to me, why that would happen to these children. But the amount of lives that I have managed to change from that moment of sadness, I can never have any questions. Not that I understand. She doesn't understand why it happened to her. But to question and see good is what is the only way forward. To be able to take that moment of tragedy and to make it her mission in life is her biggest achievement. And she said, obviously, if you take me back, I want my boys back. Obviously, I want my boys back. I'd do anything to have my boys back. But the fact that I have managed to do this, I would never, ever have managed to do what I have done. And I'm talking about she's given and changed thousands and thousands of lives on the back of that tragedy. She said, I would never, ever have imagined that I could do this. This adversity gave me the opportunity to do that. Right? We have to understand in our lives, not that we understand why things happen. We have to understand that moments of sadness, as the famous philosopher says, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Who says that? Don't say the song.
Shakespeare.
No, Nietzsche. Nietzsche says that. So, but Katy Perry are probably one of the singers, right?
Kelly Clarkson.
Kelly Clarkson. I knew there was a song. It was definitely a song. Right? Well, it doesn't kill you, makes you strong, but it's true. She nicked it off off Nietzsche, right? So this is a famous philosopher says that, not Kelly Clarkson. So, and that's the truth. The truth is, when you have this moment, you have to take it and bring it into your lives and make that your essence. Not the sadness. Make that your strength. Make that who you are as a character. One more story. I'm going to finish with one more story.
So the negativity creates your purpose in life?
Not the purpose. Your negativity, not your negativities. Your
adversaries.
Your adversities are your biggest strengths. And you can see this. Anyone, everyone think of something in their lives right now that you've been through, and you'll know your biggest strength 100% is from that. 100%. The furthest you've been to is on the back of that.
It's a flame underneath your butt.
Yeah. And it's not because it's giving you the... It's not because it's motivation. It's not because it's motivation. It's actual strength. It's the weakness. It's when it's taken away, when everything is stripped back from you, when there is nothing there to help you, when you're swimming alone, where you aren't given all those things that you're thankful and thanksgiving for. When that's all gone away, because that isn't who you are. What you're thankful for is not who you are. You are your essence. This is your essence. Let me see it. When you've got nothing, how do you get to step one? When you've got nothing, how do you get to step two? That's your essence. You understand that?
Yeah.
And the entire book of Job, which we were speaking about, was the fact that Job could never, this is my understanding, and Manali came to the same conclusion. It's not the fact that we could ever understand why our lives are like this. It's like the James Bond movie. That, you know, we walk in the middle of a scene, we have no idea, we're reincarnation, you can give me some answer, you can say, you know, whatever it is, why we have this in our lives. But when you step back and you see, hey, this is really who I am. I am me without nothing. Am I grateful to God? You know, let's bash him up. And Job's like, no, I am grateful. Hashem gives and Hashem takes. And then eventually the friends come along and tell him and fight with him and tell him what's going on. He must have done something wrong. And then you snap. That's where you see who you are, where you're really standing. That's who you see you are really standing. That's the direction we have to go in our lives. We have to take moments, we have to take those moments and be able to say, hey, let's build it up. One last story, there's a famous guy called Leon Fleischer. My grandfather used to talk about this famous classical musician. He lived in the 50s, okay? And he said, this is a different version of what we're trying to say. He was he played in the biggest orchestras. For years and years, he played in the biggest orchestras. And one day he got Parkinson's. Now, if you're a pianist and you have Parkinson's, it kind of doesn't really go, it doesn't go too well. And he had, for 25 years, he'd been teaching, he'd been playing, and all of a sudden, he lost that ability to play anymore. So what did he do? He started teaching. He started teaching. For 10 years, he taught students, and these students went on to be the biggest, lead the biggest orchestras. And, you know, be very famous. Okay, he was a Jewish guy too. Lots of Jews in this week. He was became very famous people, you know, in the music industry. And one day his wife said to him, she discovered in Japan there was this cure for Parkinson's, which would actually help him keep his hands still and be able to have another few years of playing. And they went to Japan, and he got the cure, and he came back, and he played for another 5 years. And he came to the end of the 5 years, and he said, there is nothing I am more grateful for than contracting the Parkinson's, and the Parkinson's making me realize that my greatest achievement in life was teaching my students how to play. That was what was my biggest accomplishment. playing and running, I think it was the head of the New Yorker Philharmonic Orchestra, whatever it was, right? Playing for all these biggest crowds never gave me that satisfaction as the satisfaction he got from having Parkinson's and realizing that this is really what he has to do. So, just want to end off by saying, when you have moments in your life, you have moments, and everyone has moments, where you feel down. And you feel that this is something which I don't deserve. Right? And possibly you don't deserve it, because there are good people that have terrible things that are happening to them. And we don't know why. I'm not answering that question, because no one can ever tell you, oh, you know, I sometimes see, I've become a big liberal recently, I don't know why. I sometimes see like these big conservative newscasters saying like, oh, the reason why they did this is they did that, you know, and God punished them and they got this. And I go mad, like, how do you know? How do you know? Who are you? You're not God to say, like, the reason why they got punished is because they did that. We don't know. We know what it says in the Torah. We say in Shema that if you do good things happen to you. Do bad things happen to you. We don't know anything more than that. Never let anyone tell you anything different. But what you should realize is that it's a moment of opportunity. If you ever want to get high, far in your career, speak to anyone. Anyone's ever got far in their career. Anyone wants to re-elevate themselves. Speak to them and they'll tell you the moment that they reached or realized that they could reach was the moment they sunk to their lowest. And try, if you can, and be thankful for that. Because if you realize that that is what is going to make you and take you to that next level, that's what you'll be doing next Thanksgiving. You'll be like, right, guys, what am I thankful for? Oh, I'm thankful for my family. I'm thankful that this year I'm not going to say went bankrupt because of that. Thankful this year I lost my job and I found that the much better job, whatever it is in your lives that has happened to you, that's what you should realize. And when you realize those moments, you'll be able to reach to the highest of the high.